This is a conversation with Michael Tru, founder of Prescient, who brings deep experience in data, ad tech, and AI. With a background at IBM and Oracle, Michael focuses on using AI to measure the true impact of advertising, including the halo effect across platforms. I appreciated his emphasis on ethical data use and keeping humans in the loop as AI becomes more automated. Great. Nice to meet you, Mike. Thank you very much for joining Humans on AI podcast. I appreciate your time. I've been obviously reading a little bit about you, and I found you have a very interesting background. How did you start Prescient? Before that, could you share a little bit how was the story behind and the process to get to this point to be a founder?
Yeah, of course. So I started my data career in 2012 with Oracle, which is supporting a lot of analytic software across a variety of different industries. From there, I went over to IBM, where it's largely doing more of the advanced analytics, and that's when they released their Watson technology. So you remember the little black box that beat Jeopardy back in the day. Did you ever see that?
No.
So in 2014, a little black box was played against the best Jeopardy guy of all time. And that was IBM's Watson thing. And it beat him. He was able to do the natural language process, query the question. Essentially, what you think of a large language model doing today was showcased on a piece of hardware inside of a little agent inside of that. So, yeah, I've been in the data and AI space for quite some time.
Okay, great, Mike. Yeah. And how did Prescient started? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a long story that I'm going to make short, but it initially started off as an application for the music industry for touring. And when touring stopped because of COVID, the record labels had a problem they were looking to solve, and that was measurement on what drives streams, attribution on streams, which is really hard to measure because the artists are. There's a lot of noise in the world of these artists from an organic perspective when you have very famous, like, singers, if you will. And then how is their paid spend actually driving streams? So that was a problem we set out to solve. And we partnered with a major record label. My co-founder Cody and I worked as consultants for them. And this allowed us to build our model largely from the ground up because we looked at how existing models were being utilized and they were unable to answer the question with the traditional model. So it really forced him to rethink the structure of these models and blending multiple of them together. And that was really the foundation of where the MMM started to take shape.
Nice. What were the most important things you have learned in those companies before? Like, for example, in IBM, Oracle, that helped you to build your current company?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question. And I think that AI, it shamed my thinking of like inputs and outputs or inputs and outcomes, right? Data is designed to help people make a decision and it's only created value when it's tied to a specific business decision. When you think of marketing and revenue and just the world of awareness for a brand, it gets very complex. And so really having that framework of value creation at IBM and Oracle laid the foundation for us to making sure we're building a product that not only delivers confidence for people to utilize the tool, but it delivers value to making sure that whatever their target outcome or goal is, that they're helping to drive that efficiently.
Okay. You also said something like in your bio, like you, from all these companies and everything that you've been in your career, but mostly in the companies that you've been working, the big companies mostly, like you've learned the what not to do. So do you have three examples, for example, that could be helpful?
Yes. Don't try to do too many things at once. Don't try to be an expert at everything. Second one for sure is leave the ego at the door for 100%. It's pretty well known, and I personally have seen this happen in several occasions, is when you're building something, and you take a lot of pride in being able to do a lot of the things that the business needs to do at an early stage. But as you start to grow, understand your skills and weaknesses and don't try to pretend to be good at something that you're not. It's usually typically the number one downfall of a lot of these startups. So leave the ego at the door. And three, this is just the obvious one, but talk to your customers, talk to your potential customers, talk to the ecosystem, just be a sponge for as much data as you can possibly get and be as resourceful as possible to your ecosystems. In the world that we live in is we partner with our competitors in some cases. And I think the way the world is going to be going from an artificial intelligence perspective, the partner ecosystem, your customers, all the information you can have is going to set some winners apart for sure. How about you?
Great. Me, myself, what not to do. So I kind of agree with all of yours too, actually. But maybe I would say too that I think it's important to be authentic and be honest. I think sometimes this is what I feel like. I for sure on the side of AI, and I think that AI enhances lives and makes things better. But at the same time, I feel like there's a lot of fakeness behind in this world of like in the world, but as well on the in startup world is a lot of. I find it very kind of sometimes it is missing that authenticity, honesty of yourself. Sometimes I feel that too. So yeah,
I agree, and I think that there's authenticity and honesty in. And I was guilty of this early on because I was trying to get as many customers we were going in the early phases. We needed to raise more capital. And sometimes you kind of have to sell a future vision and hoping that the tech team can hurry up and build it. But as a company starts to scale, it's very important to sell the product that you have, not that you're building, in an authentic way, in an honest way.
Yeah. Just like also, that's something that I wanted to ask you because you guys collect data right from your customers, which are other companies. So how do you ensure that data it's like you do in an ethical and responsible way?
Yeah, we take security very serious here and internally with our systems and then our external partners. We're in a pretty unique place where all of our clients' data is stored in its own environment and it's not utilized to train other models for other clients. But the other aspect of this, we're really lucky. We don't have any PII data. We don't have any first-party data. And so a good example of this, we were talking to a very large international insurance company, publicly traded in Europe, actually, where the data regulations are even more strict over there. And we got through their security approval. They were like, typically it's going to take 2 to 3 months. We got through the security approval in 1 week because we're just looking at aggregated sales and marketing data, website data, essentially.
Great. So you talk about invisible patterns in marketing data. What do you mean with invisible patterns for in marketing?
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever watched TV and saw an ad and Googled or went to Amazon to get some more information? Or have you ever seen an ad and it was in your mind and then you went and searched it a couple of days later?
Yeah, 100%. Like everywhere, all the time.
Everybody. Yeah, we live in a world of halo effects that have hidden data in there, right? And so, what is the delayed impact of you seeing an ad and then going to search that later? It gets the attribution all kind of clunky, and so we are able to essentially find patterns in when people are having exposure to ads and then when they're actually converting and where they're converting. There's aspects of viral moments. We had a client, Hexclad, that's a pan company. Gordon Ramsay and Fox News put in $100 million into the business and created this big viral moment that's hidden within sort of brand, right? Because you can't really put a number on the amount of exposure that this investment led. The easy way to say that was it went viral on this, and Hexclad did a great job of organically promoting that. And our models were able to essentially quantify like this really important episodic moment and how long did that episodic moment impact the business. So think about it, a world of paid spend and non-paid spend. How do you make sense of what happens just in the world of a brand? You could go viral on TikTok. A celebrity could be wearing your shirt in an Instagram live story, right? There's a lot of noise in the world here. And we do a good job of able to signaling out what's actually driving growth for the brand.
So I guess that you use AI to track the halo effects, right? So how do you do it? Like, how do you use AI for that?
Yeah, so we have about 120 data pipelines, data feeds. So let's unpack a little bit. Let's start with a brand, right, that sells protein shakes. And that protein shakes is being sold on their website. They're selling it on Amazon and they're selling it on retail. And to promote this protein shake, they're advertising on Instagram, Meta, Snapchat, TikTok, TV, podcast, Amazon ads, retail media networks. So we ingest all that data and we've built proprietary, actually they're machine learning models. We built a suite of machine learning models that is training on that brand's data, and it's trying to detect relationships between spend and their revenue. Traditionally, what most folks would call this would be an MMM, a media mixed model. Have you heard about MMMs previously?
No.
Okay. MMMs were built in the 60s, and say again, you were selling a drink, but there was no internet. It was in retail. There was no Meta and Google and TikTok. Where did you advertise? You advertised on billboards, on TV and radio, and newspapers. People would see that, and then they would go to the store, and they would buy the drink. It's really hard to measure because you can't see, somebody's not clicking a billboard. Somebody's not clicking a radio, but the sales are going up. So they started building these statistical models where they were looking at all the revenue of this sold over the course of the year. They looked at as much data as they could collect around a billboard, a TV, a catalog, a newspaper, and a radio. And they ran a bunch of statistical models and said, I think the radio and the catalog drove the most protein shakes this last year. And then they'll provide recommendations on what to do next year. So we're going to shift the spend from the catalog and the newspaper, and we're going to really put it in TV and billboard. And that's where these models initially started. And that's how we measure them.
Okay. So what is the main difference between doing this using AI and without AI, like with the traditional tools? What is the main difference? Like it's bigger reach, more efficient, or it's easier because it's AI and like technology doing it, not a human behind that?
Yeah, the traditional models didn't need AI because they are deterministic, right? AI models in this sense are probabilistic. A deterministic model is going to look for very clean user journeys, right? You saw an ad, you clicked the ad, you clicked another ad, and then you finally converted deterministically that it was Michael True that went through that journey. There's really no statistical modeling that's needed there. When you're thinking about a world of probabilities and forecasting, right, you have to be able to train the model on historical data to have some prior belief of how their spend is impacting revenue. And AI is really the only way to effectively learn those data sets. When you start getting into the machine learning side where we sit, we have models that are continuously getting smarter every single day with every single action being taken. And so when we provide recommendations on what is likely to happen if they keep everything the same, and then what is called the incremental lift over the forecasted baseline, right? If they implement some of the recommendations, and without machine learning models, you don't know what to recommend because they have to learn. It's like a human. We get smarter and smarter with a data feed coming in and we know to take the next best action.
So do you believe in humans in the loop then?
Oh yeah, for sure. It's something we talk about all the time. Yeah. The models largely are going to produce what it's learning from the data, but the models need to reflect like actually how the humans behave. It's how they think. That is very much alive and well today. And I think the question people have asked me historically is like, how much are humans going to be in the loop when you start having agents everywhere that are performing specific tasks? Do you even need a human there? And I think in some cases, the human could be or is being largely replaced right now. But in the context of our industry, and one I feel most comfortable talking about, is if you have an advertising agency that's buying media on behalf of their clients, eventually, and it is happening now, like media will get automated. The buying of that will get automated. But the human can provide context that these agents don't have, right? And so the human will always be in the loop, and it's part of our strategy as we move into that world in the future.
I have got a question about the advertising right now, because I don't know if like everything has happened. Well, obviously, because I'm in this world, in this kind of field, but there's a lot of things happening with, for example, before the way for many companies to promote or advertise their products was with influencers. But now with the AI, it seems like the influencer marketing is not, the brands are, they don't have to depend on that anymore because they can use AI for that. So what are your thoughts about that?
I think that AI is not just targeting the influencers, but more discovery in general. Everybody is using ChatGPT now, right? Or some sort of LLM. And I spoke about this at CES. What if I go to, where I'm in Vegas and I said, oh my, I need a blue shirt. I lost my luggage on the plane. I go to ChatGPT, says, hey, I'm in Vegas. I'm at this hotel. I need a blue shirt. Where do I go? And it's going to say, hey, here's some of the brands that we have in this location that have blue shirts. That's where I'm going to discover this brand in general. And so traditionally, when you think of going to search something, there's just a missing gap now, right? Because people are doing it in ChatGPT and then going into discovering it in like a ChatGPT and then going to purchase from there. It's taking the market share for discovery from a lot of the channels, especially think of like Google search is the one that would likely be most impacted. The influencers is the interesting concept, right? We work with a lot of fashion brands, apparel brands, CPG brands, beauty, health and wellness, where there's very large influencer engagements. And that in itself is one of the more difficult channels to measure. But yeah, AI is very quickly disrupting the discoverability of brands. And then most importantly right now is how to measure that, right? We're in the earliest of phases for third parties like ourselves to measure that. And you know, last thing I'll say is ChatGPT, obviously everybody saw announced that they're now running ads within their platform, which I think a lot of people knew was going to come. So I think over the next year, you're going to start to see more evidence and data on the impact of AI advertisement and measurement.
So what are your predictions about the future of advertising, marketing, and AI, like all combined in maybe, for now in 5 years, I don't know, like things are changing so fast.
Yeah. It's the advertising industry is no different than any other industry that is going to be driven by agents that are creating workflows that are powering reporting, analysis, and automation. And so my personal opinion is you're going to have a suite of agents that are going to be performing certain tasks and automations, right? Think of, you have a creative agent, you have an audience agent, you have a forecasting agent, you have a measurement agent, then you have a media buying agent. You buy media to drive customers, and those customers buy products. That product is tied to inventory, so you're going to have an inventory agent, and that inventory needs to be packed by financial planning and analysis. So what I'm trying to say here is, within different verticals, you're going to have a suite of agents. Eventually, they're all going to start to talk to each other. They're going to learn from each other. And in my opinion, I just think there's going to be one master agent that will essentially power industries.
And do you think that, because we talk about how everyone is using ChatGPT for everything, actually, but in talking about advertising and marketing, do you think it's a bit dangerous for creating marketing strategies with ChatGPT? Because I don't think that ChatGPT is super, can know a lot of stuff, but it's not like an expert. So what are the dangers of using ChatGPT for, or another one, for doing something professionally?
Yeah, I think the danger of using ChatGPT to do complex workflows and automation, the danger is if you do it, it's going to fail 100% of the time, right? Not fail, it might run and it might give you an output, but I think it's important to unpack the difference between an LLM of what ChatGPT is doing versus very deep or other forms of machine learning models, right? Largely neural networks, where they're designed to handle those sort of capabilities. I look at ChatGPT as more of an extended Google that is able to do very quick indexing across large sets of data and talk in a human conversation. The winner of any industry, in my opinion, comes down to three buckets. An LLM will never be part of one of those, is whoever has the most powerful infrastructure, right? Proprietary, powerful infrastructure. Whoever has the most advanced modeling, and eventually those will start to be commodities too. And then whoever has access to large volumes of data, or whoever has access to proprietary data sets. Combination of those three are going to be the ones that win and would instantly eat up any agent that was built using like a ChatGPT before they were deployed.
Okay, thanks, Mike. So I've got one last question for you. You've been a founder for many times for what I've seen on your LinkedIn and as well an investor. So what are the skills that a person who's starting now their career that they need to build and develop to become a successful investor or founder?
This is just specific to me and what I look for in investments and what have seen me and other of my friends be successful is like the only obsession that you start with as a founder is something that like you, it's very cliche, but it's everybody says it's just true. It's just, this is it. Like you generally have to believe that the most important thing is the problem that you're solving, not the ego and not the money that you would make. And from the get-go, we were just obsessed with becoming on the Mount Rushmore of ad tech is like, who solved measurement and forecasting in the privacy first internet? This was before agents. You know, now it's, you know, how do you build and power the smartest agent? So believe in what you're going to do. And if you're getting signals that it's not working, don't keep beating your head against the wall and maybe take a step back and say, I'm passionate about it, but maybe we don't have the right product or we don't have the right strategy, so on and so forth. So that would be mine. What's yours? Curious.
I would say follow your values and follow your principles, because I've talking with a lot of founders and talking and myself being a founder too. I feel like sometimes people chase the money. It's kind of chase some in the beginning, they chase more the money sometimes than what they really believe in. And as well, for sure, like sometimes you get lost in your values. What are your values? And I think that when you're not aligned for who you are or what you want or what you want to solve, when those things are not aligned and you're not aligned, it's not going to work, because you need to be aligned with everything to get there, to really believe in it. That's what I believe.
Sorry, Drew. I agree.
Okay, Mike.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for joining Humans on AI podcast. I appreciate your time. Thank you for all your knowledge and your time. Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to the Humans on AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.